It's the third race of the 2022 Formula One season, and we're in Australia, which used to be the opening race every year, but now that it's a few races in, makes you feel less bad about having a lie in and watching the replay. I'm Andrew Elliott. I'm here with my good friend David Proud, and we'd like to welcome you to this special presentation of the Tired and Exhausted podcast. If you enjoy listening, please share us with your friends and family and rate us wherever you listen. Great to have you with us. Welcome back, David.
Thank you.
How are you feeling?
I'm all right. I might cough, and I've still got like this very slightly husky sounding voice. I think it's slightly husky, but yeah. Well done for doing a podcast without me, for filling in. Well done.
Thank you. It's not easy talking on your own without, you know, you can't pause to take a breath. You can't pause to gather your thoughts. You've just got to kind of keep blabbing on about whatever while the other half of your brain is trying to think about what to say. So it's completely different from it's not like, you know, you could if I was like reading something out, it wouldn't be quite so bad. But you know, I had a couple of notes and I was just trying to talk for like 20 minutes, half an hour on my own, and it's not easy at all. It's far easier when you've got someone to have a proper conversation with.
Well,
so thanks for coming back.
Well, yeah, so you did get one thing wrong. I wasn't at BAFTA that weekend. I was at the BAFTAs the weekend before.
Oh, right.
But then I went to Belfast to do a little job that I can't talk about yet.
That was your acting one, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
Right.
And then
right.
I came back. You know, they say like anything to declare. And for me, it was COVID. So I came back and pretty much had to go into like lockdown isolation and been stuck in a box for like 10 days. And I was out yesterday and I managed to get my hair cut because I desperately needed my hair cut. And then I had to go into lockdown, which is just awful. So I've got my hair cut. I might cough. I might say silly things, but that may or may not be COVID.
Nobody will notice.
No one will notice. But at least I've got an excuse for it this week.
I'm glad you're feeling better.
But before we go on to this one, I actually did watch Jeddah on Now TV. I paid like £12.99, I think.
Yeah, I got that bit right. I said you watched it in a hotel room.
Yeah. I mean, £12.99 to watch one. I mean, you get it for a full 24 hours, but I just wanted to watch that. And it was all right. But I was then watching it on my iPad. It was a bit... iPad on my Mac. It was just a bit weird.
It's not quite the same, is it?
No. But hopefully that's the only time I'm going to have to do that. Nor did I get up first thing in the morning to watch Australia.
Well, no, I didn't. I didn't either. And it's, you know, I used to always try, you know, because Australia used to be the first Grand Prix of every season, and so you'd be moaning for a couple of months that there was no Formula One. And then Formula One would come along and you'd be, I can't be bothered. So I'd always feel really bad not getting up and watching it. And I always used to try and watch it. Or sometimes I'd kind of set my alarm and I'd just watch it on my phone in bed, you know, at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever it is. I mean, practice sessions are just out because they're like 2 or 3 in the morning.
I have a sneaking suspicion, though, that there's something else at play because it's not your favourite Grand Prix, is it?
No, because it's not. That's another thing, you know. If it was like Spa, if Spa was on at some ridiculous time, you'd make the effort and you'd watch it. But Australia, it's never been that much of an overtaking track. So, you know, at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, do I just want to watch a procession? It's never terrible, but it's not one of the best tracks. So I don't feel as bad now that we're 3 races in. Having watched the first couple, I don't mind staying in bed and watching it. You know, I mean, you and I watched it in the morning, yeah, so it wasn't like we were watching it late, but we just weren't watching it at 6 o'clock. But
it's even when you play the computer game, it's an awful track. It's just not my favourite. So yeah, it's not one that you're gonna go, I'm gonna get first thing in the morning and watch that. And didn't you say one of the practices was like 3 o'clock in the morning? And you're like, oh, you're gonna get up for that? I was like, I've got more chance of staying up for that than I have getting up for that. It's just not good, but I suppose it's good for Australians. So Daniel Ricciardo, it's his one, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, although he again he didn't really set the world on fire. I mean, we'll go into that in a bit. Shall we talk about qualifying first?
Yeah, let's. I'm going to be really cheeky today. I'm in a cheeky mood.
The porpoising was incredible. We were watching it, and you could. So there are some great views now.
Nodding the whole way down.
But there were a couple of views of Leclerc in the Ferrari, and one of them was where the camera is above his head. And you can just see his helmet bouncing up and down. And then they've got the other camera that's like to the right-hand side, but inside the helmet, to the right of the eyes. And you can see him bouncing up and down, up and down, up and down. And it
is
looks
that not
incredible.
Causing massive damage to them? I mean, I know they're fit, but...
Not massive. I mean, so Formula One drivers' necks are like UFC fighters' necks. You know, they're incredible. So it won't be causing any damage, but it will be making them sore. You know, they'll
tire them out.
Their traps will be sore. I imagine their whole body will be sore because it's not just their heads that's bouncing up and down. They're, you know, their entire body's going up and down. So it's going to be jolting your spine. You're just going to be a bit achy, and it's just going to be annoying. You know, even if you come away with zero injuries, bouncing up and down like that for 50 odd laps, it's got to be awful.
I mean, they are getting paid millions, but still.
I don't really feel that bad. Sorry for them. But even so, I'll tell you what annoys me most about it is that it makes Formula One look unprofessional. You know, these are supposed to be the best cars in the world. You know, the fastest cars that obviously there are regulations, but basically the fastest cars that man can make and can drive. And you look at them, and they're just bouncing up and down like clown cars.
It's the bounce is so quick and so horrific. It's like a vibrate. Mm. It's like a brrr. You could, you know, how
it's like they're driving on cobbles.
Yeah, how they're doing it, I have no idea. But when you look at Leclerc, he was going so fast, and he's got a competitive car. Does he tell them to alter it, or does he just crack on with it?
Well, he tells them just to crack on because he's got the fastest car on the grid at the moment. But it makes Formula One look unprofessional, and I think the reason for that is the ban on testing.
Yeah.
You know, they've limited testing for years, but they've been pushing back and pushing back because testing. Okay, let's face it, testing is expensive, and you know, it does cost a lot to chip an entire team out to a track, and keep going around. It is hugely expensive, and they want to make it, you know, better for the teams who don't perhaps have the budgets of the Red Bulls and the Ferraris and the Mercedes.
Alternatively known as Haas.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they kind of purposely put a cap on testing. And that's normally fine when the cars are basically the same and they might have a few tweaks, but they're, you know, the cars are very, very similar in overall design to the previous year and have been for years and years and years.
So when there's a massive iteration.
But when there's like a huge change, as in, okay, now you're allowed to develop the underside of the car and have ground effect, which is huge. It's like saying, okay, you're now going to have allowed an extra two wheels or something like that. Yeah. You know, you've got to allow them to have more time to test, particularly when
just for a couple of seasons, just to let it
And when ground effect was in last time, which was like late 70s early 80s, cars had porpoising issues then as well. So it's
how
not,
did they solve them?
A number of different ways. I mean, one of the easiest ways is to just change the ride height, but you can change the distribution of I was reading an article the other day. Gearbox placement can make a difference, which is why. So you notice on the Ferrari that when it was, the Ferrari was porpoising as much as anybody, much as the Mercedes, as much as there's all the other cars.
It's just he was so far out in front, no one could see him.
Not only that, the porpoising on the Ferrari was it only came into effect at a reasonably high speed. So on the slow speed corners, they weren't too bad. There was no porpoising at all. You'd see him porpoising on the straight, but as soon as he lifted off and braked for the corner, he would stop and he'd get a load of grip and would be able to kind of to zoom around again. And then only when he was going really fast, the porpoising had an effect again. With the Mercedes, it porpoises at a much lower speed. So even on some of the slower speed corners, Hamilton and Russell are still bouncing up and down. So that's why they're losing time and losing downforce, because they can they will porpoise, you know, earlier than the Ferraris will, which is one of the reasons the Ferraris are quicker.
But we were saying about this at the start. We did a whole podcast, which was what is a porpoise. You know, it's. I didn't think then it would be. I thought it was just going to be like a small little thing for the first like race. I didn't think it would be quite as big an issue as it has been.
Yeah, it's been huge. It's been huge. I mean, it's nice that I quite like the grid being mixed up, but I don't like. I want to see these cars looking amazing and looking like they're fast and not looking like clown cars. You know, that's just they need to get rid of that.
Yeah, they need to fix it
as soon as possible.
I would say that Ferrari really hesitant to even, you know, polish that car too hard.
I mean, I think they will be trying to get rid of it because it's still hindering Ferrari. Yeah. It's just not hindering them as much as anybody else. So if they could get rid of the porpoising, they will be miles ahead of everybody else. So they're still going to try and get rid of it because it can't be easy for any driver to be bouncing up and down like that for, you know, for 50 odd laps, you know, for an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's going to be incredible. What did you think of Latifi's?
I wondered how...
and Stroll's crash. I mean, Latifi, how often is he crashing now?
Yeah, because we were doing qualifying, but I think, I wondered how quickly we'd get to Latifi.
Well, recently, it's never going to be too long before we talk about a Latifi crash.
Yes. Well, and now that a certain Russian driver has left us, who was our normal kind of... We spoke about his inability to drive properly. Can you have somebody that is that bad in Formula One? When does it become dangerous? And when do people have to step in and go, you're not at the level you need to be?
I don't know if Latifi's bringing in much sponsorship or money or how much. I think he brings in a bit, but I'm not sure how much it is. I might go out on a limb and say that Mazepin is probably less of a liability than Latifi recently, because Mazepin would spin out all the time. Latifi hits people.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, he crashes into people, which is far, far more dangerous.
What was going on with that crash? Because he let Stroll pass.
He absolutely did. He slowed down and he let Stroll pass.
And then the last thing Stroll is going to think or expect is Latifi to come screaming past him just seconds later. Now, what Latifi did say is that he let him pass because he thought he was going for a hotter warm-up lap, but then realised he wasn't and wanted to take his position back. But how is Stroll going to know that?
If you're going to do that, I would suggest waiting a corner or so and not throwing one up the inside 10 yards later.
Yeah.
I mean, you could. I can understand them to a point saying that...
But they gave Stroll a three-place penalty.
I know. And I can understand them saying, look, Stroll, you need to look in your mirrors before you do a manoeuvre like that. But
to look in your mirrors and anticipate that somebody that has just let you past is going to go and past you again.
Well, if he'd have looked in his mirrors, he'd have been able to tell how quickly Latifi was going, I think.
Yeah.
However, if he's just let you past, I think the blame needs to squarely lie with Latifi on that. Personally, I think it's 75% Latifi. And I felt sorry for Stroll. I thought he got a bum deal.
Yeah, there was a really good Aston Martin this weekend, but it was a safety car, wasn't it?
That was the only time we saw it out in front, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And probably will do for some time.
It was one that wasn't damaged either.
Poor old Vettel as well.
Yeah.
He didn't have the best weekend. I mean, after having been out, because of the same reason that you were out, COVID for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, fair play to him for trying to put in a gallant effort. Going back to Latifi just for a second, it's causing a lot of damage.
It is, and it's going to be very expensive. It's going to be very expensive. So it's difficult when you're, it's not like he's bringing in podiums and decent results on the times when he's not crashing. And certainly he's crashed in, I think, 3 out of the last 4 races, either in qualifying or in the race itself. Mm. You know, he crashed the last time in Jeddah. obviously he caused the issue at the last race last season that cost Hamilton the championship.
But we won't mention that.
You know, he's crashing all the time. It's not like Williams have got a car to be able to challenge for podiums and to get points and to be that far up the Constructors' Championship anyway. So you could argue that they could just bin him off, get in any driver, and they're not going to be in that much of a worse position.
Yeah, but Albon...
They could get him Mazepin.
Got 10th, didn't he?
He did. He did. That's not going to get you much.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's still in the points. It's it. Well,
point. He's in
said.
The point.
As you said, he's in the
they're,
point.
They're still not in the points. They're in the he's point. In the
point. But yeah, I think he's one to watch to go. Still going to be here next year.
If yeah, I mean, I think he's probably got one or two more crashes, and that's it. They'll get
they'll
whether they'll bin him off mid-season, I'm not sure, but I don't think they'll have him for next
controversial.
Season. Controversial. They could get Mazepin back in, couldn't they?
Even more controversial. When you said Mazepin, I was going to go, who? Who?
Should we talk about the race?
That would be good. On the F1 podcast, let's talk about the race.
So the first thing that you and I both thought this was a bad idea, Carlos Sainz.
Right.
Starting on the hard tyres.
Yes. Right, I've got a real thing with this because I know it can work. Albon, for prime example. It can work, but you lose so many places from the start because you have no grip. So wherever you are, so say, right, okay, so you're down in seventh, let's just say for example, and they go, do you know what, that's not where you want to be, let's put you on hard tyres and go long, right? You know, by putting those hard tyres on, you're effectively actually going to be starting 10th or 11th because those cars are going to scream past you. But it's almost like they're thinking that put the hard tyres on and you can go from 7th to like 2nd. But you're not. You're going to go backwards before you start going forward. It makes absolutely no sense to me.
The only time it makes sense to me is, well, okay, there are two criteria. That I would suggest you need both in order to make this work. Yeah. One of them is you need to be further back on the grid than ninth.
Yes,
I would say. You know, you need to be towards the back of the grid so that if
wanting
you do,
to get into the points.
So that if you do lose, I mean, one, if you do lose a couple of places, it's, you know, you there's only a certain number you can lose. You know, let's say you're 18th or whatever, you can only lose two places anyway, and you're going to be at the back of the grid. Yeah.
Before you start going in reverse, yeah.
If you are at the back of the grid, the chances are, if you're at the back of the grid and you are a Ferrari or a Red Bull, then you're out of place anyway. And you know that you're going to be much faster. Even on the harder tyres, you're going to be much faster than the cars, certainly the first few cars in front. I mean, it can make sense for the midfield teams to do the same thing, but they won't have as much an effect as a top team that's at the back.
Yeah.
Another thing that you need to keep in mind is that you need tracks where it's not too difficult to warm your tyres up. Australia is notorious for taking ages to warm your tyres up. So,
which is weird in a hot country.
Yeah, I think it's the surface. I think it's the asphalt is different from other Grand Prix. And they have to, because it is so hot, they have to use different asphalts. Because they don't want it to melt, and you know, you have to use, you know, they would use different asphalt in places like Bahrain and Australia than they would in England, where it doesn't get that hot.
You need to be very careful how you say that, because it's the ass's fault.
So anyway, you need to be able to warm up your tyres.
Now I've said it, you won't be able to say it the same.
You need to be able to warm up your tyres
because
otherwise people will just they'll fly past you
because of what surface.
Because of the tarmac.
Good save.
everyone will fly past you, and it will take you, you know, whereas normally you can warm your tyres up in like a lap, maybe a lap and a half. It's taking three or four laps to get
honestly, the minute they did that. And then...
He lost positions immediately, didn't he?
Yeah, oh my... Yeah. But that spin...
He was so lucky not to hit anyone. I remember watching the replay and just... In fact, we rewound before they even... Because we were watching effectively the replay anyway. I remember before they'd actually shown the replay. You couldn't wait. You're like, right, rewind it. And we were we watched it a couple of times before they'd even showed it from different angles. And he was so lucky not to get in there, because the car's flying past him, having to swerve out of the way.
I mean, he planted it perfectly between them, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it was scary how close. I mean, if he'd have hit someone, there'd have been an aeroplane crash.
It does make you think. You're a car, right? You're an F1 car, and you have a spinning Ferrari across your path. Like, amazing.
Yeah, the reaction times of these drivers were incredible.
Talk about that. Who was it that did the under the safety car?
Well, okay, another thing. Why didn't they bring the safety car out straight away? It was obvious that they needed a safety. They were going to need a full safety car. But no, they had the virtual safety car for a few laps, and then they brought the safety car out afterwards. I didn't understand that. I mean, let's face it, that's not the worst decision that Race Control have made over the last 6 months.
We're going to talk about safety cars.
But it seemed to me that it was obvious they needed a full safety car to get that away.
Yeah, well, one person that benefited from safety car, George Russell, did well.
Not that safety car.
No, the other one.
He benefited on the second one.
But he first podium.
For Mercedes, considering it was just damage control, damage limitation, they did very, very well.
Yeah.
One thing I talked about, before we move on, there have been new safety car rules, haven't they?
Yes.
The Verstappen rule.
Yes.
Which is not the Verstappen rule, but that's what everyone's saying.
But who was it? Going back to what, there was somebody that almost went into the back of one car, absolutely, was it Tsunoda? Accelerated and slammed his brake on.
Yes.
And
but I can't remember who was.
But he almost, I mean, that was so close.
Yeah,
he
almost lightning reactions.
Yeah, to go to your point about how quickly they react, it was very close.
But yeah, so we've got new safety car rules. So now, when the safety car is pulling in, cars have to line up in single file, and you can't do Verstappen's trick of going alongside and haranguing the driver in front. And to be honest, that rule is probably going to do him a favour, because the last couple of times he's done it, he's pulled alongside Leclerc. Leclerc has forced him to jam on his brakes, and as soon as he jams on his brakes, Leclerc rockets off and gets like a second and a half in 100 yards ahead of him.
It's like being at the lights in a sports car and some idiot pulls alongside you and starts revving the engine.
He's not allowed to do that anymore. Which I think from a safety point of view makes sense as well.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably shouldn't need to have that rule, but, you know, obviously they do.
Remember Back to the Future with Flea? In the
Back to the Future 2.
Yes, with the that 4x4 that you love.
Mm.
And Marty's there at the lights, and then it's Flea and his mates in the other car.
And he reverses instead, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So in this scenario, Verstappen is Flea.
Yeah. Can we... So one thing I mentioned in my solitary podcast last time. Well, have you listened to it?
Yes.
The whole thing?
No, I haven't. I've had COVID.
Then you've had plenty of time stuck in your box to, you know, you can listen to it afterwards. Anyway, did you listen to the undercut bit that
I talked about? Yes, I did, because I complimented you on your description of undercutting.
Right, so just to recap briefly, undercutting, I mean, I won't go into the technicalities and why it works.
Because you can listen to the podcast.
You can listen to the previous podcast. But basically, the undercut is when the car behind, car number two, pits before car number one. And the theory is he can pit and then come out. And on his fresh tyres, he can get a faster outlap than the in-lap that car number one makes. And then by the time car number one comes out of the pits, car number two is ahead.
Yeah,
that's the undercut, and it works on most tracks. Where it doesn't work is on tracks like Australia, where you struggle to get your tyres warm, and it takes two or three laps. So what they tend to do is what Hamilton did to Perez, is that you do the overcut. So you hang
What's
on.
What's the overcut, Andy?
Well, so the overcut is the opposite, where the car behind waits for the car in front to pit,
right,
and then the laps that even if you're not you know, managing your tyres, the laps that you will do after the car in front, car number one, pits, will probably still be quicker than the out lap and maybe the second and third lap that car number one does after the pit stop, because it will take him so long to warm his tyres up. So that's what Hamilton did. He waited until Perez pitted, put in some quicker laps, pitted afterwards, and then came out in front. I mean, it didn't last him long. Perez kind of rocketed past him afterwards, but the overcut definitely works on tracks like Australia, where you struggle to warm up your tyres. The undercut only works if you can warm up your tyres really quickly.
Nice.
I was really hoping that there'd be there would be evidence of that when I gave my little talk on the undercut. I was really hoping, because I know the undercut doesn't work really well in Australia, but you never know whether cars are just not going to bother with, you know, and just kind of pit as soon as everybody else does, in which case we wouldn't have seen any overcuts. No. But I'm glad that there was an example for me to use.
Yeah, well done. Do you want to say? No, because it's really good. I couldn't have explained that half as good as that. And it was actually really good to see the overcut. Do you want to say a few words to Verstappen?
I feel a bit sorry for Verstappen.
Oh my God, I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting you to go, nope, I'm moving on.
Nah, he had really bad luck. He had like a fuel leak, I think, an issue with the car. Yeah. And nobody wants to see cars
on fire,
breaking down. Well, I want to see the best drivers in the best cars race as fairly as possible, and the best man wins. I don't want to see, I don't want the drivers that I support to win by default, like Verstappen did.
And there we go.
No, seriously. I like Norris. I mean, I don't mind Verstappen. I just think he's you know, he's been a bit arrogant, and I don't think he deserved to win last season. Mm. I think that was only decided by Michael Massey. I mean, very, very close, and I think he could have won it.
He could have put it in.
Had he let Hamilton passed on Copse in last June or July, he'd have had the season sewn up before then. But I want to see Verstappen race. I think he's undoubtedly one of the best drivers on the grid.
Yeah,
and I feel a bit sorry for him. And there was. I thought he was, so in qualifying, he hindered Hamilton, didn't he, ever so slightly?
Yeah.
And he went straight, given his due, he went straight on the radio to his engineer and said, hang on, was Hamilton on the hot lap? And he said, yeah, he was. He's like, ah, damn it. So he was, it wasn't on purpose. He was, showed remorse that he'd hindered Hamilton. You know, I just want to see them both right. I want to see Hamilton, Leclerc, Verstappen, Science, Norris. I want to see all these guys in decent cars with Latifi somewhere where he can't cause any trouble. Yeah. I want to see the best drivers in the world race and not have mechanical issues and fuel leaks and car failures and that kind of thing. Were you gonna say something different?
No, I just expected you to go kind of, no, I don't want to say anything about Verstappen. But measured, controlled.
I genuinely felt sorry for him. I don't like seeing any driver break down.
No.
He
was having quite a good race.
He was. I mean, I don't think he would have beaten Leclerc. I think Leclerc was, his car was just quicker on that circuit under those conditions. I think the Ferraris were quicker. But he was having a good race. He would probably come second, I think. It would be different if it was an unenforced error. If he did, if he crashed and binned it in the wall, I wouldn't feel as sorry for him. But
that kind of
a breakdown that's completely outside of, he's had bad luck. He's had like two DNFs so far.
Yeah.
So,
that's not great. Yeah.
He's not having the best season.
So I'm now going to go and my throat is a little bit dry.
Would you like a drink?
I'd love a drink. Thank you.
Okay. So what? I don't even know what this is. You've got this.
Okay.
Out.
This is this is from my rum collection. This is Appleton's. Rum. Yes.
Appleton Estate from Jamaica. I don't know if I've ever had this. Is it?
Oh, have you not?
I don't think so.
Oh, this is not one. Yeah, this is not one you put in like a cocktail. Well, you could put it in cocktail, but you wouldn't have this one in Coke. Put it that way.
Okay.
You'd put it in a posh cocktail, but it's a closer, I see it as closer to a like single malt type.
Okay, well, cheers to your health.
To your health.
Let's see what this is like. Oh, that's nice.
Oh, you need to explain the shot glasses we're drinking out of.
Skulls.
Yeah, so there's only one way you can drink out this, which is the back of the skull.
It's like, yeah, it's like the glass skulls. It's like drinking from the skulls of your enemies.
That's deep.
I think these are Crystal Head. Do you ever seen Crystal Head vodka?
Right, like drinking from the skulls of your enemies.
Well, that's what
like
the Vikings used to do, isn't it?
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, I think legend has it that they used to drink out of.
Is that why Ricardo drinks out of his shoe?
No, that's the complete opposite end of the body.
Yeah, I know, but I've never worked out why he drinks out of his shoe when he wins.
I think it was just a whim. It was like, what can I do that will, you know, that will have be funny and people will talk about and will get everyone laughing? I know, I'll do my shoe. Everyone went nuts. And then from that point on, he just had to do it every single time.
Nice.
Not that we've seen it for a while.
Once.
Have you ever seen Crystal Head Vodka?
No.
It's amazing. Right, so do you Ghostbusters?
Yes.
Ghostbusters film and yeah. Dragnet, Dan Aykroyd?
Yes.
Dan Aykroyd owns Crystal Head Vodka.
Ooh.
And it's supposedly the purest, he reckons it's like the purest vodka in the world. They've got this unique distilling method and all sorts, and they've got this kind of way of filtering it through some type of diamond and all sorts. He's quite honest and he says, I'm not too sure what the diamond filter does, but we've done so many tests on it with it filtered through the diamonds and not filtered through the diamonds, and everybody always picks the one that's filtered through the diamonds. So I'm not sure what it does, but he says it just appears to make it taste nicer. It uses the kind of the purest water that they can find. It's beautiful, beautiful vodka.
And you've tried it?
Yeah, yeah. It's one of these, I say novelty, but you don't want to throw these away. It comes in a beautiful skull, like the bottle is like a crystal skull, yeah. Or crystal head. I think it's crystal head vodka.
Yeah.
And it looks amazing. And you buy them, and you don't throw them away. You just kind of keep them and stick them on display or whatever. And these are some of the glasses from it.
Crystal head vodka. Very, very nice. Are we a fan of the Appleton Estate?
It's very nice. Yeah.
It's all right.
Very, very easy to drink.
Well, for me, it's medicinal because I'm still in recovery mode, really. So.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. I mean, in my defence, I did bring you the odd hot toddy.
You did. Yeah, you were great. And the bullet bourbon one.
Yeah, because we tried a few, didn't we? We tried with rye whiskey, we tried with Maker's Mark, and Bullet was your favourite for the hot toddies.
It was lovely. Right, back to Formula One.
Yeah, so Vettel didn't have didn't have the best Grand Prix either, and I felt sorry for him because he'd had 2 weeks off. I don't even think he was that ill with it. They kept saying he tested positive, but they weren't saying that he was like laid up in bed or anything. I think.
Whereas Ricciardo did. He was very ill, wasn't he?
Yeah, and Hamilton when he had it, but those guys. I think Vettel probably had he probably had the latest variant, which doesn't seem to be as bad as the variant before that, which wasn't as bad as the one before that. And you know, it's not. I mean, you weren't.
Well, it knocked me off my feet.
But you weren't terrible, were you? Compared if you think people who had it like 18 months, 2 years ago, and they were up in bed for weeks, and
yeah, I had a couple of days of feeling.
You had a sniffle,
ropey, and then just very tired and a little bit of a cough.
Mm. So, I thought Vettel did do well when he went into the gravel and didn't beat his car.
Mm.
So that showed skill because that's really difficult. I mean, as science proved earlier.
Really sorry for Sainz. I'll tell you for why. They now have a really, really good car. He's been unlucky, I must say, because some of the things that have been happening to him are not his fault. Like, he was on a really good lap in qualifying, and it got flagged.
Yeah, it was Alonso, wasn't it? Had the issue, and they had the red flag, and he didn't get a chance to complete his lap because that would have been better.
But I think he's a brilliant driver, but he's now seeing his teammate, who's knocked up a couple of really strong wins, he has capacity for the pressure to get to him. I don't think anyone else is putting pressure on him, but I think the pressure will be building in him to go, that should be me, not Leclerc.
Yeah, I can honestly, I think, I mean, it's, hindsight is very easy for us. He could have perhaps insisted on not starting on the hard tyres. Yeah. That might have done him a little bit better. But you know, you never know what the data the team are telling him. They could have been saying, no, you know what, all our data suggests that the hard tyres are going to be great, and this is your best chance at getting points.
In which case, stream past you.
In which case, you just do what the team tells you. So it's easy for us to say things like that. He doesn't seem to be making many mistakes. So I think it will come back to him. Whether he'll be able to, you know, for example, win the championship. You know, he's a lot behind now. It's early days, but it's going to be difficult, particularly as he's against Leclerc, who's not putting a foot wrong.
No, we were talking about this, and there's good drivers, there's great drivers, and then there's drivers that can hold their nerve, like competing for the championship. And this is the first season that we get, because Leclerc, I don't think he's a good driver, I think he's a great driver. But this is the first season we're going to see, can he hold his nerve as a world champion? As a potential world champion.
Yeah.
I like to think Norris has got what it takes, not only to be good, to be great, to be world champion, but
we don't know though, do we?
That's the thing. Until they're in the right car, in the right season, and all the planets align, that they're in competition, you have no idea if they can hold their nerve. We saw Verstappen not hold his nerve last season because it wasn't just Silverstone. There was a number of times he could have brought it home.
And also, don't forget the last three or four races of last season, Lewis Hamilton was absolutely on fire.
Yeah,
absolutely on fire, and he was by far the better. And I know it's the whole of the season, but when it really mattered, when Verstappen could have just done with another win, he didn't.
This is the thing, it's about holding your nerve, because there's going to be at least one race, maybe two or three, where your world championship is absolutely, you're at match point. You know, the tennis thing, game set match, you're serving for match point. And at that point, you've got to hold your nerve, because sometimes you can miss that opportunity and the whole thing just goes away.
Yeah, you've got to be. I mean, there are. I'm just going through the grid at the moment and thinking of drivers who can do that.
Well, Hamilton, we know for sure.
Hamilton, obviously. Vettel.
Vettel, for sure.
Alonso. Yeah. Absolutely. I remember being astounded on Saturday and watching qualifying. When it looked like he'd crashed, I remember thinking, I can't think of the last time I've seen Alonso make a mistake like that. I literally can't think of the last time I've seen him make a mistake. Sure enough, it wasn't his fault.
Yeah,
it was an issue with the car. He lost hydraulics or something. Couldn't downshift. You know, he never makes mistakes. Yeah, he's so good. Races on the edge the entire time.
Think about like Michael Schumacher, but that same like.
He just had to cheat, didn't he? And run cars off the road. I mean, he ran Damon Hill off the road, got away with it. Ran Jacques Villeneuve off the road, got disqualified. So he lost that. You know, he lost that season.
But it was that consistency, I think.
Yeah, he consistently ran drivers off the road.
But you know,
last race of the season, you just know Schumacher's going to hit someone.
How has Hamilton become world champion that many times? Consistency and holding his nerve.
Yeah, and
composure.
And he's blisteringly quick. You've got to be blisteringly quick as well. I mean, okay, yeah. So someone like, do you remember Nick Heidfeld? Mr. Consistent. He was a driver for BMW for years and it's so consistent with everything, but he never set the world on fire.
No.
So you could absolutely, the most reliable driver on the grid probably. But in, you know, he was never blisteringly quick. So you need to have that consistency, and you need to be fast, yeah. which is something that Hamilton has, something that Alonso has.
But I still maintain, out of that 20, there's a handful that, yeah, they can get podiums. Can they consistently get podiums when they're given the right car? And I think we're now going to get the answer to that this season with Leclerc and with Sainz. They've got a car that can consistently...
And Perez.
So, but we're yet to see that about, well, Russell, possibly as well. But Russell, I mean, the car's not as good.
It's, the, yeah.
But that, is in a better car than he was last season.
Yeah.
But it isn't...
The only reason I was hesitant is not a reflection on George Russell or his ability. It's that he was... I think he was... He put in an astounding performance to get the podium at the weekend. And, okay, he was a little bit lucky. You know, he pitted, or Hamilton pitted, and then as soon as Hamilton pitted, they had the safety car. So, you know, he virtually got a free pit stop. So he wouldn't have been that far ahead. However, he put in a fantastic performance, got the podium. I'm skeptical. Maybe later on in the season, when Mercedes can improve the car. But at the moment, he's not really in a position to do that. And it's not his fault, it's just the car's slow.
Which means we've not yet seen him.
No, not at all.
He's answered that question. Can he get a podium? Yes. Can he consistently get a podium if you give him the right car? We don't know that yet. Because we haven't had a chance to see it. Norris, we haven't had a chance to see it. And not everybody who can get a podium is going to be able to be a world champion. It's just Ricciardo can get a podium, you know, given the right circumstances. Is he ever going to be world champion? No.
Not when Norris is on the same team as him, I don't think, because Norris has just upstaged him.
Yeah, massively. I mean, well done for them, though, for their performance. Double, you know, two lots of points. We'll take that.
That's better than last time.
Yeah.
Better than last time. One bit of positive news for the Mercedes. They seem to be better on tyres than they had been. They were wearing out their tyres, you know, in the first couple of races quite quickly. They seem to be better on the tyres. And I know it's a different track, but they seem to be better on the tyres than the Red Bulls.
There isn't a trophy for that, though, is there? Unfortunately, there's not a well done. You made your tyres last trophy.
But no,
I get
but
what you mean.
It will mean that they don't have to pit as often.
Yeah, going forward as well, like in different races, they've obviously got something that's.
Well, if your tyres wear out, then you're going to be on tyre management for half the times, which means you're going to be driving slower, or you're going to need more pit stops than every other team. So, you know, that if Mercedes didn't improve that, that would have cost them. So making that improvement was good. Look at Alex Albon. You know, going back to him, he pitted on the last lap. What he did basically the whole race on the hard tyres.
Well, they were wondering if he was going to finish the entire race and just take whatever the penalty was. They should have disqualified
if you deliberately break a rule like that. You should be disqualified. You should absolutely be disqualified, because it's like, you know, they put these rules in there for a reason. And it's to, you know, it's to make it, you know, to be able to overtake, you know, using the undercut and using the overcut and make it a bit more exciting. So they maintain that you have to have at least one pit stop, unless it's in the rain, of course. but you have to, you know, use, and you have to have different tyre types, because you need to be, you know, your car needs to be good on, you know, on more than one tyre. So, you know, it's like a technical exercise as well for the teams. So if you just blatantly flout that, then you should be disqualified the same way that you should be disqualified if you're driving with six wheels or if you have a bigger rear wing than you're supposed to. You know, it's not just a question of, oh yeah, we'll take the penalty. Yeah, well, the penalty should be, you should be banned, or you know, at least for that race. So I'm glad he pitted. I mean, it's great that he got the point.
I mean, it's amazing. That was a really good strategy for him. That worked. And I love the fact that you were making notes throughout the when we were watching it, so that we've got notes to rely on. What does your notebook say? Can you read your own writing?
No, not very easy. That's the only thing. there's not much. I think we've talked about it. I mean, the only other thing.
Can I do my wild card controversial one?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, I read a tweet and I initially kind of went, nyee. And then I thought about it. I thought, oh, that's a really good talking point. And it was, should Monaco still be on the calendar when the cars, yeah, that's the intake of breath, when the cars are that big and yeah, should it still be on the calendar? Now, I get the fact that when Monaco started, the cars were tiny and you can have more of a race. You know, they could overtake, they could...
Are you talking about Monaco being a bit of a procession?
Yes.
Right.
The fact of where, unless you put it into a wall, where you start is where you finish. It is not a, in terms of race, in terms of a, it's not a good race. In the same way that you were saying about Australia is, it's not a great race. It's, but prestige, heritage.
I mean, I'm not one particularly for heritage.
You're not overly sentimental, are you?
No, not if it's... I think... I mean, some tracks have heritage because they're great. Spa. Yeah, I wouldn't want to get rid of Spa, for example, which has great heritage, but that's because it's a fantastic track. I wouldn't be too bothered if they got rid of Monza, for example, because I don't think that's that exciting. And if they had Imola... Which, I mean, the last couple of years where they had both, that's been great. Mm. But I think Imola is arguably a better track. So, I wouldn't want to lose the Grand Prix from Italy. But if it went from Monza to Imola, I'd be fine with that. Monaco, I'm with you.
You get what they'd say. I mean, because I initially did that same intake of breath. I was like, what? And then I went, actually, hang on.
I don't think the cars are that much bigger. And I think that we've had issues with overtaking for years. So that extra little bit of size on the cars is not going to make a blind bit of difference to Monaco because it's already a difficult track to overtake. The thing about Monaco is qualifying is always really, really exciting. And it's a great track to watch cars howling around on the Saturday. I mean, the Saturday's normally a better day than the Sunday because they're driving faster. And, you know, it's exhilarating. However, Saturday, like you say, tends to decide the race. However, in the wet, you get amazing racing in Monaco. It's one of the most exciting Grand Prix that you could ever watch in the wet. And because of where it is, it rains reasonably often. So every few years, you get an astonishing race. If I was going to lose one race from the calendar, it's I don't know if it would be Australia, but I'd probably put Australia...
Well, then we wouldn't have to get up in the morning, not that we did this
year. Than Monaco. And Australia wouldn't be too bad in the wet, but because of where, it rarely rains there. Yeah, do you want some more rum?
Oh, no, I'm fine.
Come on, you can have a little bit more.
Oh, God.
I don't know.
Just, that's it. Oh, thank you.
I don't think I'd lose...
Good talking point, though.
I don't think I'd lose Monaco. I mean, if we had to lose a few races and we had to get some amazing tracks back... then it might be on the list. I mean, for example, if it was a choice between Monaco and Turkey, I'd probably pick Turkey. Yeah. If it was a choice between Monaco and
Silverstone. I don't think the FIA would ever entertain it, ever.
No, because it's a huge spectacle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so ingrained with Formula One.
Mm.
Most people who don't watch Formula One, you say, where do you think of when you think Formula One? I'll say Monaco.
Yeah.
You know, it's hand in hand. It's so synonymous. But I think, is there a way to make it more exciting? Is there a way to change the circuit just slightly to...
Not really, because it's a street circuit, isn't it? Yeah. You know, you can't like knock buildings down and that kind of thing. To be honest, I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's the worst. I mean, Catalunya isn't an amazing track. That can be a bit of a procession, as can Hungary, and I've been to Hungary and watched the Grand Prix, and it's great fun, but it's not an amazing track for overtaking. You know, track position is everything. I think statistically track position is more beneficial at Hungary than it is in Monaco, purely because you probably get more wet Grand Prix at Monaco. So it does throw some great races. I can see what you're saying, but it wouldn't be my pick of races to lose if no. I had to pick.
No.
Well, I mean, it's not the best street circuit. I mean, Singapore, I think, is probably a better street circuit.
If you were to say to me, you can go and watch any Grand Prix on the circuit, it'd probably be up there in the ones that I want to do, to be able to say, I've been to Monaco during the Grand Prix. And that's what's weird. I know it's not a great race, but for atmosphere and for where it is and for the heritage, would I want to be on a balcony watching it with a glass of champagne looking out over all the yachts? Yeah. Hell yes.
Can't see much when you're there.
No.
It's not a great race for spectating.
No, unless not you're
like,
on the balcony.
It's not, well, no, even on the balcony, you can't really see that much. It's not like other tracks where you can, you know, you can kind of watch the, you can see like, a, you know, on lots of tracks, you can see a lot of the racetrack.
Okay, so what you're saying is...
But there are buildings in the way and you can't turn around and look behind you.
So what you're saying is I would be paying a lot of money to sit on a balcony, drink champagne and hear Formula One cars.
Mm.
I'd still go.
And not know what was going on.
I'd still
go. I've had mates go to Monaco and I've had to update them on what's going on because it's difficult for them because after a while you just see cars going around and you're not sure who's in the lead and stuff and it's yeah, it's difficult to know, you know. I've had to say, oh yeah, so-and-so's crashed, you know, halfway around the track that you can't see. That's why we've got a yellow flag or whatever. So yeah, it's not easy to even, you know, it's when you're at Grand Prix, it's when you're at a Grand Prix, it's not easy to tell what's going on often. No. You've got to have, like Silverstone, you have like little radios and stuff. And
yeah, yeah. They're quite good at Silverstone with the massive screens.
Yeah.
And the commentary you hear is not obviously the Sky commentary, so it's like...
But depending on where you are, you can see a lot of the track as well. You can see like several corners.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You can normally see two or three from wherever vantage point you are.
You're not going to get that at Monaco. No. You're just going to see cars going, and then that's it. That's all you're going to see. You're not going to be able to see much. I mean, there are a couple of places where, but you know, it's.
But the champagne and balconies, and oh.
Yeah, you can have champagne and balconies, and you know, and other venues.
I know. It's just, I think it's in my mind. It would be the whole weekend experience of going there, staying in a really nice hotel. The whole buzz of it all and stuff, because it's like when you go skiing, it's not about skiing, it's more about the, you know, all the drinking red wine and eating cheese.
I think if you're not a Formula One fan, then that's the Grand Prix to go to.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Yeah.
Because you're not going to be that interested, but it's the
but you can always say, oh, you've got,
it's a huge spectacle, the atmosphere is going to be great, you'll be soaking it up. As a Formula One fan myself, I'm going to be cheesed off that I don't know what's going on.
Mm.
And I'm trying to work out what's going on, and I can't tell what, you know, I think Monaco is more enjoyable from your sofa.
You'd be less cheesed off if you were on a yacht.
I still think I'd be watching it on TV though, and thinking, why am I here? If I was on a yacht. You're not going to see anything from the yacht.
I would be definitely saying, why am I here? Why am I on a yacht? In general, not just like, why am I in Monaco? It'd be like, what am I doing on a yacht?
Well, you never know. Maybe
like
maybe,
some stowaway.
maybe one day.
One day we'll hire a dinghy and we'll just kind of park it in the harbour and have our iPhones on and listen to cars. That's something to aim for, isn't it? Like, brilliant. Well, until next time. We'll